Welcome once again, everybody, to Blockbuster Mentality. I'm your host, Ben. Before we get started, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. It helps us out a lot and takes you 30 seconds. Please give us a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. And follow us on Twitter at BlockbusterCast, Instagram, Blockbuster Mentality, BlockbusterMentality.com. That's where you get all the updates on the show, when new episodes come out, and all that fun. Today we have another interview and movie breakdown for you with a very talented writer, Michael Jamin. It was a blast talking with him. His credits include Marin, King of the Hill, Tacoma FD, Wilfred. He's got a bunch on, just go to IMDb. He's got a bunch listed there. But yeah, it's always fun breaking down a movie with a writer to get their perspective on the writing, on the screenplay. He chose to break down Amelie, which was a first watch for me. I had never seen it, but I'm glad I did and got to speak with him on it. It's a great film. If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. And yeah, it was a lot of fun talking with him. He has a podcast called Screenwriters Need to Hear This. Screenwriters Need to Hear This with Michael Jamin. He's also on TikTok and Instagram, where he gives writing tips for people trying to break it in the biz. It's very insightful stuff, very interesting stuff. It's definitely worth checking him out. So definitely do that. And yeah, here's our conversation on Amelie. I know you've been doing a lot of, you know, TikTok and Instagram and all that. What made you jump over to that? I know you're a TV writer. Like, what made you realize, like, hey, this could be a good platform for me?
Honestly, it was a lot of, I have a project that I need a social media following for. And so the way to do that is to just give away everything you know. Just give it away. All you got to do is follow and you can get it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who want to learn about screenwriting and how to break into the business as an actor, writer, director, whatever. And I share my knowledge.
Is that something you wish you had when you were?
Well, I broke into the business. There was no internet, right? So like I would have given my arm to talk to someone, or, you know, I get knowledge from someone like me. But I found someone, after college, I wanted to study screenwriting, and I was lucky enough to find someone. I wanted to study not from a professional teacher, but from somebody who had done it, like a retired, you know, an ex-sitcom writer. And I found a guy who's great. He wrote on like the original Twilight Zone and Andy Griffith Show and Get Smart, like all my favorite shows. And so that's how I learned from him. And then later I learned, you know, from the showrunners I worked for. But yeah, I mean, I was desperate to, how do you find somebody like that before the internet, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Especially, yeah, when, you know, because, you know, I'll be scrolling through, and obviously, you know, a lot of film things are what the algorithm picks for me on TikTok and Instagram and everything. And, you know, I'll come across yours, and it's just like, wow, man. I mean, not that I'm trying to get, I mean, it would be great to be in the industry. Not that I'm, striving to be in that. I just love the industry. But, yeah, it's great to have, you know, folks like you who are out there helping people out. You know, it's not going to be easy, but you know, these are just some tips, you know, that I have for you, which is, it's awesome that you're doing that. And
thank you.
So Andy Griffith, I heard you mention, what else was your,
he wrote on Get Smart and in Twilight Zone and Love American Style. And, those were some of his big ones. So
is that what you enjoyed too? Like, was that
as a kid, like Get Smart was the show. Like I love Get Smart. You know, I'm dating myself cause I'm a little old, but I mean, I was just in awe of how he, you know, of his career.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, yeah. Well, how did that happen though? Like, how did you get under his wing? Like, how did,
you know, I think I was like at a barbecue with somebody, and I was just I was talking to somebody. That's why I often say on my Instagram or my TikTok accounts, like, you know, people say, do I have to move to LA to break into the business? And then, you know, my kind of standard response is, well, you're asking, if you want to work in Hollywood, where do you think Hollywood is? And like, I was at a barbecue and I was just talking to someone, And I think that's how I found out about this guy. Like, I wouldn't have known that if I stayed in New York where I'm from. I was, you know, you have to kind of be here, you know?
Right. Yeah. And then were you ever, were you always, I mean, I know King of the Hill is not, you know, your only credit or anything, but that's, you know, kind of, on the outskirts of everything else you've done, like animation, where, I know you've talked about this, I'm sure, on your channel and everything, but, you know, like, how different is animation, as opposed to, you know, live action, I guess you would call it.
Really is, you know, I wrote, my first job was writing on Just Shoot Me. And in many ways, Just Shoot Me was more of a cartoon than King of the Hill. Because King of the Hill was very real and very grounded. And like, it's not like Family Guy where, you know, people's heads blow up and, you know,
weird. Right.
It was a very much more grounded show. So if you know story, if you understand story structure, you can write on animation, live action, single camera, multi-camera. It doesn't really matter, you know?
Yeah. It's all just, yeah, you're writing for characters and you're, yeah. You know, it's, yeah, like you said, storytelling is what it's about.
Yeah.
Where, you know, obviously, you know, people, we like to allow the opportunity for people to get to know our guests a little bit. So like how did Just Shoot Me, that's your first job that you get in the biz, as they call it, where, you know, how does that come about? You know, I mean, how does that come about?
That was my first like staff job, but I sold a freelance episode of a show called Lois and Clark, the Superman show. And then before that I was a joke writer on a morning TV show. And then before that, I had some other kind of odd things, but the Just Shoot Me came about because my partner and I, we wrote a bunch of spec scripts, like a ton of them. I don't know. We probably wrote 10 or whatever. And over the course of a couple of years, and this one found its way onto the desk of Steve Levitan, who wrote the pilot for Just Shoot Me. And it got picked up to series, and his assistant read the script. She read like a bunch of scripts. Like, I always thank her because she started my career. So she read the script. Oh, I love it. He brought us in for a meeting, and that was that. But, you know, that's how it goes. She was probably reading a stack, like 50 scripts high. That's probably what she was going through.
Yeah, I'm looking here. You mentioned obviously Lois and Clark. You wrote the episode Chip Off the Old Clark, according to IMDb. So I guess then how did that come about? Like, what, Lois and Clark, and then you're writing for comedies. Yeah. Like, Lois and Clark is like, you know, a superhero show, which superhero fandom is huge right now. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you get to write an episode of Lois and Clark?
One of my first jobs in Hollywood was an assistant to two executive producers, two writers, and they were lovely people. They ran a different show, a sitcom many years earlier, and I answered the phone. Like, the phone would ring, and I'd, hello, and then I'd patch it through. That's all I would do. And then I would get them lunch, and I'd screw up that, and then I'd make coffee, and then kind of made bad coffee. It's like, they were just lovely, even though I was kind of a screw up. And then they wound up as showrunners to Lois and Clark a couple of years later. And I was always in touch with them. I said, hey, can my partner and I pitch you an episode? And they very graciously allowed us, which, like, that's a big deal. It's really a big deal because we were no one, right? And so we pitched them like five episodes, and they liked the one of them. And they said, we'll buy that one. And thank God, you know?
Are you a comic book guy, or are you just, no. I just like writing. No. Like, that's,
no, it's just, you know, there's an opportunity and learn about Superman.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it happens to be about Superman. I know the show. So, you know, this is my story for this character. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. That's awesome. But yeah, no, that is great. And then, yeah, I mean, you went on to you're, you know, obviously still going, writing for, lots of TV shows. Now I see here you did, you directed, I see an episode of, The Marin Show.
Yeah.
Is that something you want to get into more, or is that just like a one-time thing? You're like, nope, had it. Like,
I would do it again. That was because my partner and I were the showrunners of Marin on IFC. And Mark, who's always very generous, said, hey, you guys want to direct one? And as showrunner, you're always kind of looking over the director's shoulder anyway, telling them what they're doing wrong.
Yeah.
And that was my opportunity to prove that I didn't know what I was talking about. And so we jumped into it. It's not like, I don't really want to direct. I would direct something, a show that I was running, because then I'm the boss and I kind of know. But to be a director on someone else's show is a whole different level of stress.
I bet. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, that's, man. Who is your partner?
His name is Siebert Glarum, and we've been writing together for many, many years.
Yeah. Now, how does that work? Because, I mean, yeah, like the pros and cons of it. Because we had James Murray, who's on Impractical Jokers. He's also an author, and he writes books, and he has, you know, a writing partner. I tried to ask him, and then we went on a tangent, and I didn't get an answer. But what are the pros and cons? Like, how does that relationship work, like with a writing partner?
It's like a marriage, honestly. I've been with my wife, and we do everything together. Every job we take together, and you're hired as one person. So you're like, the show is getting in theory two people for the price of one, which makes you more employable in theory. And in comedy, it's kind of more, I guess, more common than drama, because in comedy, you know, you don't know if it's funny until someone's laughing. So, like, we're writing a script. I pitch a joke. If he laughs, maybe it'll go in. If he doesn't laugh, it won't go in.
Right.
So, I think it's kind of more important for comedy. But I also find that when I've worked with other writing teams, the writing team scripts, I always seem to be like a little bit tighter, just one step better, because you have that extra person, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. They had to have that. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's the more people, the better. It's similar to kind of our show. Typically I'll have a co-host, and it's like, if I run out of things to say, he's right there to back me up, you know, and it's nice. Today, you know, it's just you and me, my man, you know, it's just,
yep.
You know, we have to fill in the blanks here, you know.
Born.
that's great that you have that. I see. Again, I'm going off IMDb here. We're obviously going to get to the topic of the show, folks. We're going to get into the movie. But speaking of movies, what I see, you know, your main credits are TV.
My partner and I have written three movies. We sold two of them. The two of them we sold were 20th Century Fox. Like, we didn't really enjoy the working in movies. For a writer, it's generally more enjoyable to work in TV, because you have more creative control. Usually the money's better. It's just better. I mean, I like everything. I like it much more. In the film world, the director is the boss. And so the writer works for the director. But in TV, the writer is the boss. So, you know, that's kind of why. So,
That's interesting. So yeah, because, I mean, the writer is always there for TV, whereas
in movies, once, not a lot on the set.
they wrote it, all right, and then it's off in other people's hands to do what they will with it. And the scripts you sold? I'm sorry, I don't know if you said it, but are they movies that were?
No, they don't get no screen movies. Don't get made.
they just don't get made.
Up until maybe 5 or 10 years ago, you can make a really good living as a screenwriter in Hollywood and never have any of your work get made. It's just how it was, because they would buy so much, and now they're making fewer movies, and the movies they make are usually like blockbusters. They're trying to make the Marvel movies and stuff like that. And so now there's much less work for feature writers, and a lot of feature writers have migrated to TV.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. We saw them, and they're in the warehouse at the end of Indiana Jones, by the bottom of a pile somewhere.
You're like, oh, there's my script right there in that box as they're panning out. Well, because I mean, the TV is like an actual job, like it's an actual steady job. Well, you hope, anyways. You know, it keeps going season to season, and you know, it's like I said, it's an actual steady job. Whereas movie, it's one and done. Like, all right, what's the next? Yeah. What do I do now? You know,
it's a little harder in TV as well, because the shows go on to streaming, the orders are shorter. So you're doing, instead of 22 episodes a year, now you're doing maybe 8 or 10. And so then you're still kind of hunting for work a lot, but probably not as much as a feature writer.
So as long as you're selling the scripts, though, even if they don't get made, is that okay? Like, are you you gonna admit?
As long as the check clears, you're like, woohoo.
Yeah. Well, because I mean, if the movie ends up being successful, are you just for writers? Is it just you sell the script and you're done at that point for movies?
I mean, you'll get residuals and stuff.
Okay.
You know. If you're one of the really high elite writers, you're doing great. But even still, it's not uncommon to, like, you know, if you're one of the elites, maybe you're getting one movie made every 5 or 10 years. It's not you're not getting a ton. You're not really watching. Whereas, you know, every week I can turn on TV, I can see something I wrote, you know.
Right. Before we get into the movie that is in the title of the episode, folks, what are you working on anything actively right now? What you got going on right now?
My partner and I've been writing on a show called Tacoma FD, and we go back in January. So in a couple of weeks, we'll go back to production with that. And then we also have two pilots in development, and both of them are animated because in the time of COVID, they're easier to produce and safer.
I bet.
So that's what we got going on.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I have a side project that I'm working on, which is a book that I'm working on. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then you got I know you started a podcast, and you got your whole Instagram and TikTok thing going. And
yeah.
Your name's just getting out there, man.
I'm a TikToker now. I'm going to do a shuffle dance.
Do it.
Do it.
Go ahead. we're waiting. What's up? I feel like I should know this, but who are those three figures behind you?
These go. Okay, so my partner ran a show called Glenn Martin DDS, which was on Nick at Night. That's Glenn Martin. That was played by Kevin Nealon.
Oh, okay, yeah. he has quite the long face they made.
Oh, yeah. He's got a little watermelon head. And this was Bryan Cranston played that guy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we did a spin-off pilot with him. And so it's amazing. We had amazing... Yeah, that pilot was shot, didn't get sold. Got sold, didn't get put on the air. So
okay, gotcha. So that is a hot commodity right there. That especially that Bryan Cranston one, probably.
I guess so. You know, it's
No, that's great. We like to have people on, that are in the industry, preferably, because we like to get their perspective on one of their favorite films, and the film you chose is Amelie, which is how I pronounce it. I don't know.
Amelie.
Amelie.
Mon ami.
I got to put the
have
French.
Have you seen it?
I did. I will. It's always confession time on this show. This is my, we always watch the show, even if we've seen it beforehand, but this is my first watch. I had never seen it. It's always been on my list because it's always been in like the top IMDb movies or whatever.
Yeah. What do you think?
I will get into that.
Okay.
No, it was very enjoyable, and I definitely want to pick your brain on it a little bit. But first of all, why did you pick this? It's from 2001. Why did you pick this movie?
You know, I pick it because some on my Instagram and my TikTok page, I get a lot of feedback from people. People, like, one thing they always say, a lot of people say, is I have a great idea for a movie, and my response is, you don't need to have a great idea for a movie. Like, you need to have an okay idea for a movie and execute it great. So for people to say, I get a great idea, you don't need a great, you probably don't even have a great idea. You just need an okay idea and execute it really, really well. And I think that's a perfect example. Amelie is a perfect example. If I were to tell you what that movie's about, if I were to pitch the movie to you, it's not a great idea, but it's a masterpiece because of how well it's executed. So the idea is basically painfully shy woman can find love for everyone but herself. Like, that sounds like a Hallmark Hall of Fame movie. It really does. It doesn't sound like a movie. They parody movies like that.
Right.
So, and yet the execution is brilliant. It's a masterpiece. And there's so many, there are other movies like maybe another example. Okay. So what do you think of this idea? I'm going to pitch you. Tell me if you want to make this movie. A college graduate kind of feels like, doesn't know what's going on in his life. So he winds up having sex with an older woman, gets tired of her, and winds up banging her daughter. And so that sounds like the plot of a porn. That's not a good plot. The idea isn't good. That is the plot of The Graduate, which is one of the best movies ever made. And it's because of the execution. It's not because of the idea. And so I kind of like talking about Amelie. It's like, that's a perfect example of a movie like that, you know?
Yeah, that is so true. Yeah, because when you look at just like, yeah, the skeleton of the movie, like, okay, this is what it is. This is, you know, that's what it is. And I knew you were talking about The Graduate, but when you put it like that, it's like, yeah, that is what that movie is, essentially.
That's not a
like,
good movie.
Yeah, it's like, it kind of sounds sleazy. And
yeah.
It's, but yeah, execution, man. That is, you, as you said it, I mean, yeah, it's incredibly important in storytelling in general. I mean, it's yeah, just execution. You gotta take that outline and then expand on it. Like, what can we do?
Yeah.
So I mean, with this, I mean, Amelie. One thing I did want to ask you is when. Do you have examples of good writing that didn't have so good directing, and then great directing that didn't have so good writing? Like, who makes it happen? Like, I know it's a team effort. I know a lot of, you know, things are involved, but do you get what I'm trying to say? Like, you know, what?
I don't know if I have examples, but I generally I think we know this to be a fact, that no matter how great the actors are, if the script isn't any good, and the direction isn't good, it's a bomb. No one wants to see it. And that's why you see all these movies with fantastic actors in them that are bomb, that are terrible. And it's not because of the actors. So, and then on the other hand, there's plenty of movies like from newcomers that you've never heard of the actor, or maybe they're foreign films that you've never heard of the actor. The actors are kind of unknown, but because the script is so good, it's a wonderful movie. So I just think the writing has to come first. The material has to be there first.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense, because the director has to have something to work with, and then in essentially the rest of the team has to have something to work with and all that. This movie kind of starts off with Amelie as a young girl, and it has a narrator, first of all. What are your thoughts typically on films with a narrator?
Well, a narrator is a great way to get out what we call in the business pipe, which is exposition. So without that, you can see, you have sometimes often these clumsy, boring scenes to get out all the backstory. But with the narrator, you can kind of zip through that kind of fast, because the narrator will just tell you what's going on.
Yeah.
Luckily, there's quite a bit of backstory in that, but it's always treacherous when you're telling all this backstory, because it was so brilliantly written and directed. It's very entertaining, but even still, the director is skating on thin ice until the story starts. Because you need to explain how, because Amelie is such an odd character. You need to explain how she's so odd, or else it's like she's a Martian. So she had she was built from scratch, and we learned, okay, her parents screwed her up, and this is what happened. So
yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting too, because the narrator, it's exposition, but it's not like it's almost just like their quirks, it seems like, in this movie. Like, it's not like this thing happened, which you're gonna need to know later on in the film. Like, it's just, oh, this is what this character does and why, you know, this is just their quirks. Mm-hmm. This guy sits in the coffee house
creatively that you're loving every minute of it.
Yeah.
That's all execution, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We get to know how Amelie works. You know, she had her, you know, mother died right in front of her from someone committing suicide landing on her, which, you know, it's tragic, but at the same time, it's kind of humorous in a way.
Her heart used to race when her father would touch her pulse or whatever, her heartbeat.
Right.
Because she never got any affection. And like, that's wonderful. I was like, man, like, you know, those moments like that just filled me with jealousy as a writer. Like, why, what am I doing? Why am I not writing like that?
Why haven't I thought of this? it's got that. And then, yeah, like I said, it gives you their quirks, like with Amelie, it gives her, you know, she likes to dip her hand in like grains of, sacks of grain. And
yeah, wonderful.
breaking the top of creme brulee with a spoon. It's like
all small stuff. That's real stuff that I'm sure that the writer, either it happened to the writer, that the writer didn't make up, or the director, it's probably stolen from their life because it's just so small and real.
So speaking of execution, I've heard you talk about, shoe leather and all that, but I mean, this isn't really shoe leather. It's like, did the director do a good job of telling this stuff? Like, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think of what the difference is. Like, when it can be just too much. Like, why do we need to know this stuff? Did the director just do a great job of relaying what was in the script? Like, what do you think?
I think that's actually, I think that's a writing solution. Even like this collection I'm writing now of personal essays that I'm working on. And so I'm writing, I feel a great obligation to the reader or my audience whenever I'm doing something is I have to entertain you. And if you're not being entertained, doesn't mean you have to laugh, but you have to be to entertain, drama is entertaining too. But if I feel like that's my obligation to you. And then if I don't fulfill that obligation, well, screw it. You'll just do something else, You'll read a book or watch something else on TV. And so my obligations, I always think with the viewer or the reader in mind. And so to make it I used expression earlier, like when you're skating on thin ice, skate fast. So if I'm not if I'm not on story, if I'm not doing something on story, but I'm taking a side trip because I think it's important or I like it or add some texture, go fast, make sure it's entertaining, and then get back to the story because you're going to lose them. You're going to lose.
Yeah. Now that makes sense because, I'm thinking of, obviously, when you're watching the movie, you can tell it's fast paced, but like in a script, I don't know if I've actually ever read a full script, like a movie script or a TV script. Like, I assume it sort of reads like a fast book or
no.
Is it? No. Okay.
No, not always.
That's why you're on the show, to tell me teach me.
Like, it's like some writers, it should move. It should constantly move. But obviously some moments you want to play slow and you want to have it linger, but you want to, I sometimes read scripts by young writers and they'll say, I just want to keep this part in for me. I like it. And that's selfish. That is, because it's not for you. That's what your diary is for. If you're writing you have to write for your audience. And so you don't put stuff in for you, it's for them. And so, if you're not fulfilling that obligation that I talk about, you're not doing your job.
Sure. Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah. And again, like you've already said, like, are you entertaining your audience? Like you said, don't have to make them laugh, but just make sure it's entertaining. And this movie just does a phenomenal job of that. Just keeping you engaged. Like even when they switch, there's a narrator and then all of a sudden Amelie is narrating like her piece of things. She's narrating for a little bit and then you don't ever hear it again. Like that's towards the beginning. And then I think it's just the narrator, the rest of the time.
One thing that it really also stands out about that movie for me is that usually when you write a movie, you have two characters in conflict, and that's just how it goes. Two characters. But in this movie, it's her. She's in conflict with herself. And yeah. if there's really two parts of her, there's the introvert and then there's the part that wants to connect with, the guy. So it's a love story, but it's not really because he's not in it. Like they have no scenes together until the very end.
Right.
So there's no conflict between those two. So that it's between her and herself. And if I were to write this movie, God, wouldn't that be amazing? I would have, the only way I could have figured out how to break that story, how to break into three acts is if that occurred to me, I have to approach this movie as if Amelie has two different characters, as if she's two different characters. Then maybe I could break that story and turn it into a movie. But that's why I think the writer and director are so brilliant, is that, that's what they realized and I didn't. So.
and you're not yet an Oscar nominated writer. What's his name? Guillaume Laurent.
I think it's Guillaume Laurent, and I don't even speak French. But
there you go. I pronounce the L's. I should know better. I pronounced the L's, and that was just terrible. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Guillaume. So yeah, I mean, essentially she, you know, the story, you know, kind of gets going when, you got the backdrop of, Princess Di, dying in the car crash. Mm-hmm. She's kind of distracted by that, drops the top of like her perfume mm-hmm. bottle or whatever, hits the tile, and she finds this box of old pictures and I think there's like a toy car in there. And, so yeah, that kind of is what gets her story going.
What's another thing that makes it a masterpiece. I will not stop talking about how good this movie is that
please don't
everyone in the movie. It's you're looking at one subject from five different angles or whatever. And it's her story. Amelie's story is how she wants, it's her struggle about connecting with somebody else, her connecting with this love interest. But everyone else in the story has the same struggle. It's about connection. How does the guy who's lost his daughter, the relationship with the daughter, how does he connect? How does the guy in the diner, how does he connect? You know, he's an angry guy and he wants to connect with this woman. How does the father's alone. He needs to connect. So that's why she sends him on this adventure with the gnome.
Yeah.
And so everyone has that same struggle. You're just looking at connection through that lens. And then there's the man, the guy with the brittle bones.
Yeah.
He can't connect because he's literally locked in. He's literally can't touch anybody. So it's all about connection. And that's what good movies are. It's like you take one little thing and you examine it from five different or whatever, four or three different way, you know, angles.
Yeah, it's so true because, yeah, I mean, you got, you know, essentially all these people need a push and even Amelie needs a push, you mm-hmm. know, to go. She obviously wants, you know, love, I guess you could say true love. You know, it seems like that's what she wants. You know, that's,
I mean, she's lonely. She's a girl who wants to be connecting with somebody. I mean, that's what love is, right? It's connection.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's not really so much a romance, but I mean, that's what she needs. She needs to come out of her shell. She's too shy.
Yeah. And that's, you know, what all these people she ends up helping, you know, are like her father, you know, that's such a great example. Yeah. Like doing the whole garden gnome thing, you know, she steals that at first. You're like, what is she doing with that? And then, you know, we get a picture of it. I know at one point it's the Empire State Building, but it's the first time I forget exactly where it is, but yeah, it's like, what's going on? People are sending me pictures of this gnome, you know? And, but yeah, he just kind of needs that push to like discover the world. Like you've been locked in ever since your wife died. Like you got to get out there. And that's kind of what I think, the driving force of this movie is, even with Amelie.
She puts up roadblocks everywhere. She sends this guy Nino on a wild goose chase. She sets up all these roadblocks for him so that she doesn't have to connect with him. And when he passed that test, she's freaked out because she was hoping part of her was hoping he wouldn't, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's so, yeah. Cause it totally explores that introverted personality, you know, that personality of the introvert. It's like you want to, you know, get out there and do everything. And you see her imagining everything, but when it comes down to it, when it comes down to action, that's when it's like, I'm just going to go back into my shell here, you know?
And you like that movie.
Huh?
I'm glad you liked it. You know?
I mean, and that's what I love too about, you know, even doing the show is, you know, talking out a movie and like, I just grow to appreciate it more, you know, as you talk it out, you know, and I think that's just a sign of a great movie too, is just you start picking apart these little tiny details and you're like, oh, I love this too. And this,
I agree. You know, I think a sign of a great movie is one that sticks with you, that makes you think about it after you leave the theater. And so many, you know, I've seen a lot of movies, you have, Sue, they were like, wait, what? Like a month later, like, I don't even remember what it was about.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I remember like thinking like, I liked that movie, but yeah, well, what was it about? Like, yeah, but yeah, the great ones, it's like, yeah, those are the ones that you're just pondering on. Yeah, it's definitely the actions. Do you think what she does, what are your thoughts on what she does with the produce store owner? She mm-hmm. kind of sends him kind of down this whirlwind of craziness.
She punishes him because she you know, that's slightly off, but she feels like she has to be a protector of this guy who, because he can't make these connections on himself for himself. So she has to protect him. You know, she's a lovely character. She has to protect people, you know,
but did she go too far?
No, never.
No. Okay.
I love it. No. no, I don't think so. I mean, you're entitled to feel differently. Yeah. I don't.
Cause yeah, I mean, again, I think it's a great, you know, again, it's not a slight on the movie, like to say, you know, I think she might've went too far. I think it kind of maybe shows the flaws that she realized her quote unquote power has.
Well, I would say if she went too far, then you would have not have liked the ending of the movie. You would have lost. She would have lost you. She would, all right, I don't like this character, screw her. But because she didn't, you still root for her.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. You're happy the dick in the movie gets his comeuppance. Yeah. You know, you are happy about that. Yeah, I like to overanalyze and find the crazy in people, I guess. I don't know, but yeah, yeah. Okay, fine. She was right in doing that. Screw that guy. There we go. We figured it out. Yeah. That she even, yeah, like you alluded to earlier with the guy that's always in the, I want to call it a coffee shop, but it's not really, like, it's yeah, like a bar, like cafe. Slash, it's, yeah. It's like they sell cigarettes and lottery tickets, but at the same time they're selling, you know, wine and cognac and all this. Yeah, you got the guy who is there kind of, I don't know if stalking's the word, but he's there with, you know,
yeah,
after the one, I think it's his ex they used to date, I think.
Hey, it was someone else. Yeah. She's we don't see. Yeah.
And then you see Amelie be like, no, no, she's the one that likes you. And then he starts focusing his attention, you know, over there.
Guy, she has to teach him how to connect with somebody. So she
exactly. Yeah. Yes.
But a terrible idea for a movie, don't you think?
Yes,
it's a terrible idea. The girl can't find love for everyone but herself.
That's right. But it, like you said, it works. It's I can see why it's rated so high on all the sites and all that. How do you take like IMDb ratings and Rotten Tomato ratings? Like, what do you where do you fall on that? Like, do you let that sway you in if you're going to watch the movie, or if, oh, this movie's going to suck, but I'm going to watch it? And
I more think of how does it affect the shows that I'm writing on? Like, what do people think of the shows I'm, and honestly, I don't care. I don't know. Like, it's really not my business. Cause I don't get caught up on the good reviews and the bad reviews. That's not why I became a writer. I became a writer because I enjoy doing it. If someone else enjoys it, wonderful. But this is a me exercise. So
this is a me exercise. It's all about me, baby. Yeah, but it's you know, when you're as like a movie fan, TV fan, you watch a movie and you just want to enjoy it, right? Like you're not worried about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's sometimes I'll watch a movie and I think about how difficult it is to produce or how hard the scene might be to write. And then it kind of ruins it for me. So I try to really keep a distance because I don't want that. Then it becomes work. I want to enjoy it. You know?
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Just like has being in the biz affected the way you watch stories and all that? I assume it has.
When I saw The Revenant a couple of years ago, and they had, you know, half of it takes place in the mountain in the snow, and I'm watching the scene and I'm thinking, I'm like, where are the footprints? There's no footprints, because you know there's a camera here, but behind the camera there's 50 or 100 crew members. They're freezing their asses off, and they can't walk on the set. They can't put their footprints. Literally, they can't cross there, and they're miles away from the nearest bathroom. And like, that's all. I'm like, oh, these guys are miserable. And then I looked up I read a little bit online. I'm like, yeah, from what I read, like half the crew walked out on the day one, like no thanks. It's just torture. Cause I'm on set quite a bit. So I know what it's like.
Yeah. You're just thinking, man, poor guys and gals.
I see a shot and I'm like, oh, how long did that shot take to set up?
Oh man. Yeah. So yeah, you're definitely, you think about, those things. Mm-hmm. The whole, Amelie and, what is it? What is she? The landlord of the place she lives at, like her husband.
Yeah.
Left her.
Storyline. Yeah.
And that, yeah. Like, so she like kind of gives her, I love that because yeah, she kind of gives her closure on that whole thing because her husband like died in a
she's trying to force her to stop connecting to this man that she loved, and she has to break. So again, it's about connection. Let's stop that connection so you can make a new one.
Right. Yeah. So it's just like, yeah, again, she's doing all this stuff for everyone but herself. Mm-hmm. But finally, you know, she does get to her I don't even know the guy's name. What was that?
Oh, Nino is the love interest.
Oh, Nino, that's right. Yeah. Nino. She gets to him after, you know, kind of playing these like cat and mouse games, you know, sending him to the carousel and then up and, you know.
The ending is very important because he shows up to her apartment and he knocks, and she could have just opened the door and they lived happily ever after. But as a writer, you can't do that because then your main character is not active enough. She needs to be in charge of her. This is her problem. She's not taking charge of her life. So she's not going to grow in the end unless she takes charge of her life, which is why she leaves to run after him. And then she finds him.
Yeah. So
there's two moments that there's a previous moment at the end where it could have ended, but that would have not been satisfying. So they had to kind of do two endings to make it satisfying.
Well, yeah, because they have her imagining him just walking in without knocking. Mm-hmm. and coming up, and she's like imagining that, like, that would be great. But it's like, yeah, it's great to think that it would be that easy. Things just fall in your lap. But no, you have to take action. You know, that's, you know, another message of this movie. You have to be willing to take action. And I think it kind of epitomizes how you feel when you don't take action is when they do that, when they're in the cafe and he leaves for the first time, like when she sees him for the first time and like he walks away, and then like it shows like her just like kind of turn into water.
Yeah. Wonderful. Right.
Yeah, man. That was like, wow, that you get that. 'Cause I think we've all had those times in life where we're like, oh, why didn't I do that, like, and then you're like, oh, the moment has passed and I can't do anything about it now.
Yeah.
And it just, yeah, perfect, as you've said, execution there. Right. Just so would that have been in the script to say she falls to water? Or
oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, I mean, okay. It might have been the director's idea. I don't know, because I know the director has a co-writing credit on the script. I believe he does.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm sure that was in the script.
Yeah. And then yeah, I guess that's, yeah, I always think of moments like that, like visuals. I always think of like what's actually in the script. So like I mean, if you're writing a script, how many visuals are you putting there? Like how much are you actually describing? Because it's not like a novel where you have to describe every tiny thing.
A problem that I see from young writers often is they often over-direct their script, and that's not the job of the writer. The job of the writer is to write, but I feel like they do that because writing is hard. I might as well I'll just make it easy by directing. I'll do someone else's job because my job is hard. But in that case, it was critical. There are a bunch of moments, you know, where like I'm sure it was in the script. You have to write it in because there's a camera moment. She turns to a puddle of water, and I believe the camera tilted down, and so you can't just show up on the day of the set and just shoot it. The camera has to know what to do. So right. It's in the script.
Yeah. No. Okay. That makes sense. Whereas so a writer wouldn't say camera pans down, like it would sometimes, maybe, but yeah,
sometimes there are moments when you have to do it, but you don't want to overdo it. You don't want to over direct it. It's, you don't have to do, like, you could write, yeah, the camera pans down to reveal she's now a puddle of water. You wouldn't I don't think you need to write. We open on Amelie sitting at a desk. The camera pans over to the door to reveal close on the other guy walking. Like, that's over directing, you know?
Yeah.
That's too much.
Yeah, no, yeah, I can definitely see that. And then, you know, obviously it has the happy ending it deserves. You know, there's some, you know, darker moments in this movie, but, you know, it wraps up nicely. I really appreciate, you know, how it kind of, I like when movies kind of end how they began, whereas, you know, the narrator is just kind of describing what else is happening the rest of the time. Yeah. So it's like, for this movie, it's like just life just continues to move on. So no matter what she would have done, life would have moved on, but her personal experience, I feel, would have, you know, is what this story is about. It's not about what life moving on for everyone else. It's
on her.
Amelie's. The movie's called Amelie.
And we call that bookending, when you start with something and you kind of end with something and it feels satisfying. That's why you're pointing out you like that. Yeah. It feels like you're two ends of, you know, you're a book, you're two ends of a bookcase, a bookend.
Yeah. No, I'm so glad you picked this movie, because yeah, I mean, it's again, one that's been on my list for a while, just never got around to watch it. I mean, let's be honest, you know, it's subtitles, so it's like, you know, I gotta read.
This counts as a book, though. Now you could say you read a book.
That's true. You know, a 2-hour book, you know, it's like, any final thoughts you had on the film that we didn't bring up, any scenes in particular or anything like that?
I don't think so. I mean, it's been a while since I watched it. You watched it last night, but, you know, I'll watch it again in a year or so, cause I love it.
Yeah. It's fantastic. I can't believe it's, because, you know, I've, you know, heard of the movie, and it's been around forever. I can't believe it's been 20 years now, man. That's
nuts.
insane. Nuts. Unfortunately, let's see, didn't win any Oscars, was nominated for 5 Best Sound, Best Cinematography, Art Direction, Original Screenplay, and Foreign Language. How did, let's see, bear with me here, sir. I want to see what won Best
Sound. Yeah, you have to see what won.
I know, like, how did this not win? 2001, we are looking it up right now, folks. It is, never seen it, or No Man's Land?
No Man's
Land. It's a Bosnian film.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
If the movie is more important, if it's about war, maybe it'll
might Yeah.
It's important.
Because this is essentially a rom-com, I guess you could call it, you know?
Right.
I mean, obviously this movie is the movie that stood the test of time more than No Man's Land. Not saying No Man's Land's a bad film, because I haven't seen it, but I've heard of Amelie even before this episode. So I had another screenplay question, and it's going away from me. Yeah, it'll come to me, and I'll just email you, and you'll answer it. So, or I'll see it on your TikTok or Instagram. No, man, it's been a blast talking to you about this film. So glad you chose it. Where can people find you on the social medias and all that jazz?
I post daily screenwriting tips on how to break into Hollywood, how to be a better writer, to be more creative. I post on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook. And my handle is @MichaelJaminWriter, @JaminWriter, right? @MichaelJaminWriter. And you can also check out my podcast, which I just started, called, it's called Screenwriters Need to Hear This. And you can find that everywhere they have podcasts.
So like what's Marc Maron like? Like what's he, is he easy to work with?
You know, Mark has a reputation of being like a hothead and a difficult guy. And that's part of his act and his persona. But he's actually very easy to work with. He's very professional. He knows what he wants, and he's very generous with the people who work with him. So it was a pleasure. We did 4 years of that show, and it really was a great experience.
Yeah, that was one of those where were you guys, I don't want to say canceled, but was it just time was up, or did you guys decide the time is up?
The network wanted to do more. Mark creatively was ready to move on and do other projects, and you know, he's since gone on to great success. So you know, that's he didn't want to do more. We're like, hey, let's ride this train into the sunset. He was trying to move on. So,
yeah, yeah. When the show is named after someone, you kind of have to stop when they stop.
Yeah,
typically.
Yeah.
So, so you know, that's probably a good rule of thumb. But all right, man. Well, again, thanks so much for coming on, man. This was a blast.
Yeah, thank you so much. My pleasure.
Well, there you have it, folks. Michael Jammin. What a blast talking with him. Very cool dude, insightful dude. And yeah, definitely a pleasure having him on. Again, follow us on Twitter at BlockbusterCast, Instagram at Blockbuster Mentality, blockbustermentality.com. Yeah, all the updates on the show and when new episodes will be releasing. But all right, folks, well, that is it for me. For Michael, I'm Ben, and as always, grab some popcorn, grab some snacks. We'll catch you guys at the movies.